morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Korea hosts dozens of African leaders in the first Korea-Africa summit.
South Korea is looking for critical minerals and also markets, so this is the place to go. Africa's market is growing. Right now, 1.4 billion people by 2050. It makes a lot of sense to look to Africa.
Analysts say a coalition government will affect South Africa's domestic and global policies. Civil society organizations in Zambia are concerned about what they say is the unconstitutional denial by the police of the right of opposition parties to hold political rallies. Today is World Environment Day, and the UN says billions of people are affected by land degradation.
This World Environment Day, we're asking everyone to join the global movement to restore our lands, to build drought resilience, and to combat desertification. Because land degradation and desertification affect over 3 billion people.
Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol is hosting a two-day summit with dozens of African leaders beginning today. Yoon says his country will expand development aid to Africa and pursue deeper cooperation with the region on critical minerals and technology. VOA Korean Service reporter Hoon Jung-cho says in return, South Korea will expect to get access to Africa's vast natural resources, especially minerals.
South Korea is looking for critical minerals and also markets. So this is the place to go. Africa's market is growing. Right now, 1.4 billion people by 2050. One out of every four persons on the planet will be in Africa. So this is a growing market. And it's also a very, very important source of critical minerals that South Korea needs for its technology sector, you know, electric cars and artificial intelligence. They are competing against Japan and India and China and the United States. And so it makes a lot of sense to look to Africa.
When you talk about minerals, what kinds of minerals are we talking about?
So we're talking about rare earths. We're talking about critical minerals. So Africa has about 30% of the world's critical minerals, chrome, cobalt, manganese, lithium, nickel, cobalt, graphite, those kinds of stuff. They're kind of minerals that are used for semiconductor manufacturing and batteries and particularly electric cars and also solar technology. All those minerals are there. The Chinese kind of have cornered the market on that. They control a lot of it. And so it makes sense for South Korea to be jumping in the fray.
What does these African heads of state, what do they hope to get out of it?
Well, Africans are happy to be courted. It's better to be courted than ignored. And so the African countries that have some of these minerals are looking to add value to them, and they want to entertain foreign investors who may help either develop some of these minerals before they export it or pay a slightly higher price for it. But these kinds of meetings, it's a grab bag because you have a lot of leaders there. It's about 48 countries represented. They all have different needs, but this is an opportunity for them to talk about other things such as tariff-free access to Korean markets, efforts to attract Korean investment to the continent. Then, of course, in the bilateral sections, each leader will push what is important to their economy. But there's also aid on the agenda. And the Koreans are also trying to kind of counter North Korean efforts to recruit some of these African countries into its orbit as it continues to deal with North Korea as a diplomatic problem.
Some observers might say that this is just yet another country that's, you know, going to go in and take more natural resources out of Africa, and they're just, you know, being selfish about it and looking to enrich themselves at the expense of these African countries. How is South Korea different than other countries that have already gone there, like you mentioned China? How is South Korea different?
Well, South Korea is not different from any other country. Any country that goes into Africa is seeking to advance its interests, and that's okay. These African states are not children. They are sovereign states. They know what's good for them, and they should come to the bargaining table with a list of their own demands. And so to the extent that they've mismanaged prior relationships, we can say those are their own faults, and hopefully they learn from those experiences with China, for example, or the loans that they took out that never led to development, that led to deep indebtedness. They should learn from those things and come to this new engagement with those lessons and make better bargains. But essentially, any country that goes in there has something that it wants, and so do the Africans.
That was VOA Korea Service reporter Oon Jung Cho. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam. The African National Congress failed to win an outright majority in South Africa's recent election. This means the ANC, for the first time, will need to form a coalition with other parties to govern. What will it look like, and how will it affect the country's policies internally and globally? VOA Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo reports.
South Africans say they are excited and eager to see what a coalition government is going to look like days after elections show no party won an outright majority.
Well, I'm excited because the ANC is finally going to be in a position where they have to reconsider how they've been approaching running the country and governing the country.
It's a very challenging for the ruling party. They have to think now which coalition they should do, because with DA it's something else, with EFF it's something else, with the latest MK it's also something else.
Depending on the coalitions, like if it is the DA and the ANC coalition together, the DA can actually get in and actually do some good where the ANC has failed.
The African National Congress secured 40% of the vote, followed by the Democratic Alliance with about 22%. A coalition between the two could reconcile the country, says Tendai Mbanje, election analyst.
The DA ANC coalition promotes non-racialism. The DA ANC coalition promotes unity in the country among two races. It could also strike balance between the competing differences in terms of addressing issues of poverty.
Other coalitions could be with the newly formed party led by former President Jacob Zuma, Umkhonto Wesizwe, or MK, which won about 15%, or the Economic Freedom Party, EFF, which won about 10% of the final vote tally. Edgar Githua is a professor at Strathmore University in Kenya. He spoke to us via Skype.
And unfortunately, Zuma has already pronounced himself on this and said he will only have a coalition with the ANC on condition that Cyril Ramaphosa is not going to be the president. Yeah. It looks like ANC, EFF, and they need someone else. They need one of the other tiny ones to help them just pretty much get to the 51% to be able to form the government comfortably.
The ANC says its leader will not resign following election results, but is open to working with everyone to form a government that will serve South Africa's people.
At this stage in time, Cyril Ramaphosa is the best foot forward for the ANC, simply because of his reputation within and globally.
While internally, governance could improve with the coalition government, South Africa's positions on global issues such as the Russia-Ukraine and Israel-Hamas wars may come into question, both Mbanje and Githua say.
How they look at the Palestinian-Hamas issue, those are some of the things that will now have to be renegotiated afresh within the coalition government, because all political parties have their manitos, have how they to project themselves.
South Africa has accused Israel of committing genocide in Gaza in a case they brought to the International Court of Justice. Israel argues that its ground offensive, which the Gaza Health Ministry says has killed about 36,000 Palestinians, is in response to Hamas militants' attack on Israel last year that killed 1,200 people, according to Israeli tallies. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Civil society organizations in Zambia have expressed concern over what they say is the unconstitutional denial by the police of the right of opposition parties to hold political rallies. The police say they support the democratic rights of all political parties and citizens to assemble and express their views if they do so within the bounds of the law. Father Emmanuel Chikoya is the General Secretary of the Zambia Council of Churches, one of nearly 12 civil society organizations that published a statement on Tuesday. He tells me the organizations condemned the uneven use of the police in deciding who should protest and who should not.
I think this is triggered by what happened on last Saturday. One of the opposition parties, the New Heritage Party, planned to have a rally in Mandevu, which is one of the high-density areas in Lusaka. Police never gave them permission and told them they couldn't meet because of security concerns. But the same police, same came in big numbers, heavily armed in terms of weapons, in terms of vehicles, the kind of armored vehicles they were using. And right under their watch, the members of the ruling party came with intentions to disrupt that meeting with all kinds of weapons, pangas, you know, all kinds of things. They watched those without doing anything. So my point is, our point is that it is easy for the ruling party to meet any time, to gather in any cage. And today, our memorial park, one of the private burial sites, there was a burial of one of the ruling party members. They basically turned the place upside down. If a similar action was done by opposition cadres, we were going to be talking of, you know, casualties by now.
Father Chikoya, I am sure you are also aware that the government has been concerned recently about individuals making statements and inciting tribalism. So you can yes. see why the government probably is trying to make sure that you get permission to hold their protest.
They are not asking for permission. They are supposed to notify the police and people should be allowed to freely protest. The problem comes in when those in the ruling party feel more entitled to visibility, and so they don't want any other to speak. And so in order to scare the others, they will come and disrupt and cause mayhem. And so, yes, you've talked about tribalism. That we have condemned, and we say any person that promotes tribalism and as they break the law, they should be treated in accordance with the law. But in Zambia, you will note that even though some of the ministers in government have uttered, made tribal utterances, and then later on they backpedaled and say, no, I think I was misquoted. There are videos trending also of ruling party cadres challenging and even basically telling the IG of police that we will take the law into our hands, and they are doing that. And we are seeing a narrative that we saw during the PF regime where police were incapacitated, police would helplessly stand by and watch the ruling party cadres do illegalities such as, you know, blocking traffic, being all over, sitting on windows, on top of vehicles, and causing mayhem. So that is an issue that is what is worrisome. If the law is being applied equally, we'll be saying yes, thank you to the government, thank you to the police. We don't want anarchy, we don't want lawlessness. Just within the last 10 days or so, cadres in full view of the police with all kinds of weapons again were insulting the former head of state and howling all kinds of unpleasantries against it. Those border on hate speech. And the duty of the police, the role of the police, is to make sure that both in the ruling party and outside it, any lawbreaker must be apprehended.
So, Father Chikoya, if these groups feel that your rights are being violated, why don't you go to court?
I think sometimes we do voice out. There have been instances where, especially those that are very competent in the area of law, and for example, Chapter One Foundation has been able to take on certain cases. They sued. And so through those, where necessary, we are able to pursue legal matters. But of course, it's an issue of cost and all those delayed processes that become unsustainable.
Father Chikoya, so very nice to talk with you, and thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure to interact with Voice of America. Thank you.
Father Emmanuel Chikoya is the General Secretary of the Zambia Council of Churches. He was speaking with us from Lusaka, Zambia. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Buckley in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 5th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The International Monetary Fund said Tuesday that it has agreed to unlock $574 million in financial assistance for Zambia following severe drought. The staff-level agreement follows a review of a $1.3 billion loan the International Monetary Fund granted to the debt-ridden African nation in 2022 and is subject to approval by the IMF Executive Board, it said. According to the French news agency, the AFP, the deal followed a request from Lusaka to increase the loan from $1.3 billion to $1.7 billion. Once approved, it will allow Zambia immediate access to roughly $574 million mounting audit. Lusaka had about $18 billion in debt when it defaulted in 2020 as the COVID-19 pandemic battled Africa. At least 40% of the land in the world is degraded. This is according to the United Nations Environment Programme, which says the problem has affected around 3.2 billion people globally due to desertification. As the international community marks World Environment Day today, the UN predicts that more than three-quarters of the global population will be affected by a drought by the year 2050. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
Millions of people globally participate annually to raise awareness and act on environmental issues aiming to protect the planet's future. Today's World Environment Day theme is land restoration, stopping desertification and building drought resilience. The United Nations Environment Programme, UNEP, says human environmental destruction is on the rise, causing serious effects such as climate change, ecosystem loss, and land desertification. Inga Anderson is the executive director of the UN Environment Programme.
This World Environment Day, we're asking everyone to join the global movement to restore our lands, to build drought resilience, and to combat desertification. Because land degradation and desertification affect over 3 billion people. Freshwater ecosystems are also degraded, making it harder to grow crops and to raise livestock. This disproportionately affects smallholder farmers and, of course, the rural poor. But nature is resilient.
Today, floods, heat waves, droughts, and other extreme weather events are putting people's lives and the services they rely on in danger. The UN says the world must take proactive measures to reduce the impact of environmental degradation, especially for vulnerable communities.
By restoring ecosystems, we can slow the triple planetary crisis, the crisis of climate change, the crisis of nature and biodiversity loss, including desertification, and of course, the crisis of pollution and waste. We can help to reverse biodiversity loss by 2030 in line with the Global Biodiversity Framework.
The United Nations says 75% of the world's population will face drought by 2050. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says despite people relying on land for survival, the world is experiencing harmful pollution and climate disruption and biodiversity loss. Together, they are transforming fertile lands into deserts and thriving ecosystems into dead zones. Anderson says the UN Decade of Ecosystem Restoration backs commitments to restore 1 billion hectares of land. Already, six countries have pledged to restore 300,000 kilometers of rivers and 350 million hectares of wetlands.
Land restorations can be a golden thread that ties these together, action and ambition across all these three important gatherings. So we must make this work count. I thank the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia for hosting World Environment Day 2024. On this important day, I ask everyone to join Generation Restoration. Our land is our future, and we must protect it.
Ibrahim Diao is the executive secretary of the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification. He says countries should work towards restoring land and promoting resilience to drought.
At the UNCCD, the UN Convention in charge of land and drought, we are championing the cause of land restoration through initiatives such as the Great Green Wall in Africa or the G20 Global Land Restoration Initiative. Through the International Drought Resilience Alliance, we promote resilience to drought. Restoring land and building drought resilience require concerted efforts and innovative solutions. It demands the integration of traditional knowledge with innovative science and technology.
According to the UN, at least 12 million hectares of land capable of producing 20 million tons of grain are lost each year, threatening global food security. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in San Francisco.
An umbrella body representing 77 environmental protection groups in Namibia is voicing opposition to proposed green hydrogen production in the Sol Kaib National Park by a German company because of the harm they say it poses to animals and plant life in that area. Vitalio Angula reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
The Sol Kaib National Park in southern Namibia
is one of 36 globally recognized hotspots for biodiversity. It is renowned for succulent plants as well as wildlife that includes antelopes, leopards, and brown hyena. However, this biodiversity would be harmed if so-called green hydrogen was to be produced in that pristine wilderness, says Chris Brown, the head of the environmental coalition known as Namibia's Chamber of Environment.
Where Germany and, to a certain extent, other countries in the European Union are offsetting the costs of green hydrogen, offshoring it, and we're carrying the burden of those costs, and we're carrying the long-term, permanently long-term costs of losing a national park with all its future development to provide relatively short-term cover for Germany's energy, that is a major problem. It's a moral problem as well as long-term economic problem and a welfare problem for Namibia.
Green hydrogen is produced using wind, water, and solar power to produce ammonia, which is then converted to hydrogen, which can be used for steel production and as a fuel for ships and vehicles. In a rush to decarbonize, European member states like Germany, Belgium, and the Netherlands have allocated millions of euros to pilot projects along Namibia's sunny and windy coastline for green hydrogen production. Ambassador Anna Beatrice Martens heads the EU delegation to Namibia.
Private European companies are already invested in some of the nine projects of green hydrogen, which with a pipeline of investments of 401 billion Namibian dollars. On our side, we have grants and loans. You can see that down here. I don't need to mention that. We have also public money.
However, environmental law expert Hans Christian Manke questions the legality of allowing green hydrogen production to take place in the 2 million hectare Tsau Cape National Park.
There's another legal aspect. There is the park management plan, which is a contract between the government and the people. Now, certain NGOs and communities, the NAMAs and so on, they have concessions in the park. But that park plan is a contract, not a policy or whatever. They create something which government says this is how it's going to go. But the moment green hydrogen comes in, then they have to throw that park management plan out of the window, which they haven't done yet.
In its quest to become carbon neutral, Europe wants to cut carbon emissions by 57% by 2030. And this means producing 10 million tons of green hydrogen in Europe and importing the same amount from countries like Namibia. The Chamber of Environment Coalition says it does not oppose green hydrogen production itself, but says it should not be done at the expense of Namibia's environment. Vitalio Angula, VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
The International Committee of the Red Cross has suspended food deliveries to thousands of displaced households in part of Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo as fighting intensifies, forcing more people to flee. Over the last few days, clashes between the Rwanda-backed M23 rebels and the Congolese army moved closer to Kanyabayonga, a strategic town that is home to more than 60,000 people in the northern front of the conflict. And that's it for this Wednesday, June 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty, Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
The Voice of America keeps you in touch with the latest news.
Tune in at the top of every hour, every day of the week.
For the 5-minute VOA newscast.
We bring you reports from our correspondents and interviews with newsmakers from around the globe.
Give us 5 minutes and we'll give you the world.
VOA,
your trusted source for news and information.